This is Jim Setzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today is a former professor of mechanical engineering at Clemson University. She has degrees in civil engineering with an emphasis in structural and engineering mechanics, which is also known as applied physics, in materials engineering science, the area in which she holds her PhD. In my judgment, she is the most qualified scientist studying the events of 9/11 with special attention to what happened to the World Trade Center. It's a great pleasure to welcome back to the show Judy Wood. Judy, pleasure.
Pleasure to be here.
Just terrific. And I gather that you have some new research you have been working on that you would like to share with us.
Yes, it's brand new. I've just in the process of putting up that page, and it may be a new series that I'm starting, like the Dirt series, but it's a continuation.
Another terrific.
It's continuing.
Would you like to take us to the page and start working through it?
Yes, there's a link on my homepage in the top of the news section.
Okay. Let me get there. So we're going to Dr. Dr. Judy Wood, drjudywood.com. Very easy to remember. And let's see. If we can get our typing straight.
Dr.
Yeah, I'm there.
Y-W-O-D.
Got it. Now, well, I'm going to the news. That's in capital letters there, news.
Yep.
Okay. Clicked it.
And
I'm there.
At the top, you see a listing for more dirt.
A listing for more dirt.
Yeah, there's a listing for today's show on the left side, and on the right side is the link.
Okay. I see for today's show down below. Oh, yeah, more dirt, sure, under news again. So just scroll down a little bit to the yellow boxes in the news. On the left is 6 December 2007. That's a famous day, as my dad used to refer to that as a year and the day before Pearl Harbor, Judy. That happens to be my birthday. And more dirt. We're on to more dirt now. Hit the related link. There we are.
And these are pictures that were taken on a recent trip to New York.
Okay.
A group of us went to Ground Zero and took pictures.
And here's a guy who's still wearing a rubber hazmat suit. What in the world is going on there, Judy? This is a long time after 9/11.
He's at the corner of Church and Liberty.
I didn't know that was a hazardous intersection.
Apparently, it is.
This is very, very bizarre.
Now, if you notice, it's a nice sunny day.
Nice sunny day.
You see a guy in the background with a short-sleeved shirt.
That's right.
About 75 degrees out. You don't need a jacket.
Looks very pleasant.
And so he's going to be overheating in that rubber suit.
I would think.
Why would he want to wear that?
Very curious. He must have some very, very good reason.
So if we continue down, I have some maps there for folks to see where we're going.
Okay.
And if you click on them, it springs out a bigger picture. And 13... that old point 13, that's where the guy in the yellow rubber suit is.
Number 13. Oh, so it's very near 1 and 2, the Ground Zero. He's just a corner away from it at Church and Liberty.
Yes, and this is from the 12th of October this year.
Very strange indeed.
And if you scroll down to figure 3 and 4.
Yes.
You'll see some folks there looking over a nice new dirt pile.
That's a monstrous pile of dirt. And I dare say I could recognize those two folks. They seem very familiar to me.
If we're looking west, this is up at, you know, corner of BC and Church.
Uh-huh.
If you look on that yellow number 11.
Go back to the map. Check out now number 11, okay, that's Church and Day, or between Fulton and Day, yes?
And you go, you know, get across the street, and there's now the structure there, and we're looking west at that dirt pile. It's sort of the corner of Church and D.C., but a little bit south of there.
This is 5, 6, and 7 we're talking about?
Yeah, but also 3 and 4. I mean, that's a nice dirt pile.
Uh-huh. Sure is. Very handsome. Good quality dirt.
And it finds that it's above ground level.
Uh-huh.
And I turned to the an innocent bystander standing there next to us and asked him, why are they trucking in all this dirt?
Yeah.
I wanted to see what he would say.
Yeah.
He said, oh, no, they're not bringing it in. They're digging it up.
Oh, really?
This is just an innocent bystander. And, you know, people need things to make sense to them.
Uh-huh.
Wouldn't make sense that they're trucking in dirt.
Uh-huh.
So he tried to imagine they're digging it up. Southern Manhattan is all bedrock.
Yes, there wouldn't be a lot of dirt available for digging.
They've already dug down to the bedrock in cleaning out the bathtub.
Yes. As you show below, actually.
Oh, right below?
In 10 and 11, I don't want to leap ahead, but yeah.
We're looking at still at 3 and 4.
Yeah, okay, we're still at 3 and 4. Yes, got it.
And so this fellow was trying to imagine they dug up this dirt. I don't know why, you could dig up dirt, but, why it would end up being above ground level.
Uh-huh.
But I think, we all have a need to have things make sense.
Indeed.
And, that was his effort on the spot. And if you look at figure 5, 6, and 7, they were taken 3 days later of that same place.
Well, it looks like even fresher dirt, Judy.
The dirt's missing.
Yeah, well, what's there looks pretty fresh. Right, that's true, it is missing. Where in the world is it gone?
Hey, the dirt's there one day, gone 3 days later.
Of course, just as he said, they were digging it up, putting it in trucks, and hauling it off. What he didn't realize was they also were bringing it in on other trucks.
And the digger that's out there, grappler, I like to call them diggers.
Right.
Digging away in there, and there's a big puff of white fuming came out. And the woman standing next to us said, oh, my gosh, what was that?
Really?
She noticed that something weird was going on. And so there's this digger that's pushing stuff around. You can't really see it very well. You can see it in figure 9.
This puff of white or whatever?
You see a white kind of haze in front of the thing, but it's hard to tell.
Right? Yeah.
Maybe we have done some other film.
But she was a little bit taken aback.
Oh, she didn't know what on earth that was. It was like you broke a puff ball, a big puff ball. And it's what's noticeable, though, is the dirt that was there 3 days earlier is gone.
Yes. The big pile is gone.
Right. And then we go down to figure 10 and 11, and you see some more of those yellow rubber suits. And they're hosing off each other's boots.
They sure are.
This is on VC Street, looking west. Now, why does that person, that gal in the foreground, she doesn't get to wear a yellow hazmat suit? I wonder why.
I hope this isn't sex discrimination.
No, I don't know why some wear yellow suits and some don't.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Dr. Judy Wood. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Hey, today my special guest, Dr. Judy Wood, is, in my judgment, the leading scientist studying the events of 9/11, and we're reviewing recent work of hers in relation to the World Trade Center and a series of photographs from a trip she made to Ground Zero in the company of Morgan Reynolds, and you can find them on drjudywood.com. And you want to click the news link at the top and then come to a yellow box, and opposite an announcement of today's program, you'll find the links to the photographs that we're looking at. Judy, we're down to, 6 and 7?
Yeah, 10 and 11, where they're hosing down each other's boots.
That's right, and we got a female in the foreground who doesn't get a hose job.
Right. There's something different going on there. But why are they hosing down their boots like that?
I presume there's something they need to get off of them, and promptly.
Way around the corner, on VC Street, it looks through very well. There's this netting up, and you can see figures 13. The picture quality is challenging because of that.
I take it deliberately.
Yeah, there are certain places they just don't want you to see. Like there's something going on there that's intriguing. Now, that leads us to the next portion, trucking dirt out. Over on the other side, figure 14.
Yeah.
The other side of the complex, if you want to see on the map, it's basically directly across the street from where Tower 2 stood.
Back to the map. We're back at 13? Church and Liberty, or?
Yeah, over, but further down Liberty, right in front of where Tower 2 used to be.
Okay, further down Liberty, between Washington and Greenwich.
Close to West Side Highway, between 13 and the West Side Highway.
Oh, I see. Okay, between 13 and West Side Highway. Okay.
And this is actually right in front of Bankers Trust.
Okay.
In this picture, Bankers Trust is on your left. You notice they have this kind of tunnel you walk through so you don't get exposed to what they're doing with Bankers Trust. And this gate 3C, there's a truck there about to come out. And we get to see inside the gate. But there's the guy there in the foreground who's standing guard. He's very much a guard, like a guard dog. And you can't cross that street and go look in the fence. That's what you're seeing in there.
Isn't that strange? I mean, if everything were on the up and up, this is like the Warren Commission locking up all the documents and records related to the assassination on the grounds of national security, whereas if the government's official account were true, there would be no national security aspect to the idea of this lone, demented gunman who took out the president with some lucky shots. So this certainly suggests that something's wrong with the government's account, that they have to conceal access to Ground Zero, especially, this is years afterwards.
Years?
Years.
And you see that I call him the guard dog there. He's doing his job, making sure nobody gets near. And the way he looked at the camera was almost as though he wanted to come confiscate the camera.
Really?
But no way should we cross the street. We knew better than to do that.
Uh-huh.
And so here the gate opens up, and look what's going on in there. The truck's hose job.
More going on with the hose. We're talking about figure 18?
Figure 15. Figure 15, he's getting a hose job on the tire.
Okay, 15.
And there's, more... hosing down going on, and you can see in figure 17 a high pressure hose at the back of the truck.
I'll be damned!
Why is this truck so clean?
Gee, this is really remarkable. I mean, it's got to be the residue of some process that brings about molecular dissociation that's causing them to have to keep it so clean so it's not going to dissolve too fast. I think they probably can't keep them from dissolving, but they can slow down the rate at which it occurs.
I think this dirt might be used sort of like a sponge.
Yeah.
To mop up whatever, and it gets carried away in the truck.
Right.
Who knows where. And so they bring in new dirt. I call it changing diapers.
I gather a similar technique was used at Chernobyl.
Really?
Yeah.
I have to look at that incident.
That they brought in mountainous quantities of dirt, and they use it, as you suggest, like a sponge or a diaper to soak up the contaminants. In that case, they were nuclear.
So if they didn't want these contaminants dribbled down all over the streets up and down Manhattan, they'd better hose down that truck. That's what it appears.
This is really something.
And you see, in figure 18, the truck drives away, and those are wet tire tracks. It's dripping water.
Yeah.
And something you'll notice about this truck is the tarp. You'll see in figure 15 that tarp that's used to cover the bed of the truck to make sure stuff doesn't blow out.
In 15?
Yeah, apparently it's jammed. So.
Oh, what they got is an automated tarp. It's an automated covering.
Right, and it's jammed.
And it's supposed to roll right back and cover it.
It's stuck.
And it's stuck.
That allows us to identify this truck easily.
Wow.
So in figure 19, as he drives east on Liberty Street,
yeah,
that planted tarp thing.
Yeah.
And it waters, you know, behind it. Now, right about there.
Yeah, you can see when it's stuck there. I mean, one side is up and the other side is jammed. So it's jammed on the left and it's trying to operate on the right.
Right. We know it's the same truck.
Yes.
And then about that point, the truck stops and two guys in yellow rubber suits jump out of the driver's side, walk around the back of the truck, and then the truck drives off. So apparently there was another driver that took over.
In other words, once they got it out of the hazardous area, they didn't need these guys in these hazardous protection uniforms.
I think it's called compartmentalization.
Yeah, indeed.
And those guys in the yellow suits probably didn't know where the truck was going, and the guy driving the truck probably had no idea
where it come from
and why those people were in yellow suits.
Yeah.
And that intersection that he's about to reach, that's where the guy in the yellow hazmat suit is directing traffic.
Uh-huh.
You'll see him there.
Damn, Judy, this is strange stuff. This is very strange stuff. Stand by. We're going to be right back with my special guest, Dr. Judy Wood. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Today, it's a great pleasure to have back my special guest, Dr. Judy Wood, whom I consider to be the most qualified scientist studying the events of 9/11. We're reviewing a series of photographs taken during the visit she and Morgan Reynolds made to Ground Zero. You can go to her website, Dr. Judy Wood, drjudywood.com, nothing could be simpler, and look at the icon, the link for news, capital N-E-W-S, all caps, and that'll bring you onto a page where if you scroll down slightly, you'll find a yellow box. On the left, it has the date of today's program, 6 December, and on the right, it gives you the link to where we are today, the page we're looking at. And in terms of our review of the photographs, we're down to, well, something like 19, 20, and 21, Judy.
Yes, and figure 19, there's a truck driving east on Liberty Street towards the Church-Liberty intersection. And I told you at the end of the last segment how it stopped. Two guys in yellow hazmat suits hopped out, came around the back of it, and then it drove off as though it had gotten a new driver.
This is just so completely disgusting. I mean, here it is so blatant right there in front of God and everybody, as the phrase has it, and right under our noses. But then that's the way this administration operates.
Yeah, the best stuff is right out there in the, you know,
in public.
In daylight.
Yeah.
And here he drives through the intersection, apparently following the rules of the road and not making a left turn. They make three right turns instead. They go through this intersection, then turns right, and then turns right, and loops back around so he's going north on Church Street.
Okay.
And I have some other pictures that haven't been put up yet that show that little park there. That's the park where Double Check sits. That's that little statue that looks like a guy with a briefcase.
Yes.
It's at that corner. And it's interesting, the tree looked like the bark of it had disintegrated.
Really? Is this in figure 23 or elsewhere?
I don't have the picture up. I'm
okay.
Got to that particular location. The tree looked pretty
anemic, huh? Pretty spoiled.
Okay, and then we turned left and we started heading north on Church Street, and here comes our truck. You can see in figure 22, you see the truck.
Yeah, I see it with a slightly askew covering that doesn't operate.
So he's heading up north out of town. And so looking more around that particular area in figure 23, 24, 25,
yeah.
We walked over that corner. And you see part of where that church is and so forth. But you see, like, figure 24, there's piles of dirt again.
Yes.
So what's with the, you know, like a pen full of dirt?
Yes.
We also walked down to the fast train station, and they wouldn't let us take pictures.
They wouldn't?
No, get your camera confiscated to take pictures.
What? And what in God's name, you know, could justify that's on the up and up?
Oh, maybe they thought we were working for, you know.
This is so un-American. I can hardly believe it.
This is
dictatorial. This is petty tyranny.
So there must be something good to see down there that they didn't want us to see.
Very strange.
Well, then we also walked around southern Manhattan, just a few blocks south of the World Trade Center complex. And there was another construction site. So we walked over to look in.
This is 26, 27, 28, 29 now.
Right. I don't know if it's Thames or if it's Carlisle Street. It's back right behind Bankers Trust.
Okay.
That they're taking apart piece by piece.
Really?
Yeah, they're unbuilding it.
The sort of thing they would have had to do to the World Trade Center, the Twin Towers, if they had been compliant with the Port Authority's directives about the removal of asbestos.
Right, and it's going to cost more to take it apart than it took to build the building.
I believe that. That absolutely is right.
So I'm looking at this cluster of pictures down the street. I should have noted if it's Thames or Carlisle, but it's one of those two. And we're looking west. And I can figure 28, we're looking west. And you can see behind those boards is a construction site. So
yes.
Over and I look over the edge.
Yes.
No security guards.
Yes.
I wonder if they're digging up dirt there.
Yes.
So I look in, and they got some new gravel they're pushing around to, for bedding for concrete or something. They're making a, it looks like a foundation for some new building they're putting in. There's also braces to hold up the wall there. Again, this is probably below the water table, or getting down there, so they have like a bathtub-type wall here. And you see some, pretty old gravel that's in there, but I don't see any dirt. They don't use dirt over there.
Fascinating, really fascinating, Judy.
Interesting. They don't use dirt at this construction site, just a block or two away. And they don't use security guards. I wonder what the difference is. Then we did some other walking around town, some streets, nearby.
Well, of course, the difference, presumably, is there's a problem at the World Trade Center Ground Zero, and there's no problem at this other construction site, at least no comparable problem.
Right. That's what I got out of looking at this site. And anybody could look in and walk in and jump over the edge. It wasn't very well guarded or protected. If you weren't watching where you were stepping, you would just fall right in.
30, 31, 32. That's very interesting. You wouldn't think World Trade Center would need to be so closely protected. You think they'd want to make everyone aware of it. After all, this is where the catastrophe took place, right? This is where the terrorists, waged war on America. You think that for political and other reasons, they'd want to have this very open and exposed.
Yeah, because it would be a connection people would have to what happened. That they would need to come and see the site and kind of feel it.
And the justification for the war on terrorism, including the invasions in violation of international law, the UN Charter, and the U.S. Constitution of Afghanistan and Iraq.
Looking again at figure 29, here I am just looking right in. If I jumped over that edge, that's like a one-story drop or more down into that hole.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, not even, they should have some tape or something across there, but I think they know that people can watch their stuff. And not fall in.
They treat New Yorkers as adults.
Yep.
Except around Ground Zero.
Right. Unless they're
treating them as adults there too, and they're concerned with what they might notice and figure out. Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Dr. Judy Wood. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Today, my special guest is Dr. Judy Wood, former professor of mechanical engineering at Clemson University, who, in my judgment, is the most qualified scientist studying the events of 9/11, especially at the World Trade Center. Judy, we're reviewing a series of photographs that were taken during a visit you and Morgan Reynolds made to Ground Zero and its surroundings. And for anyone who is just joining us now, go to her website, drjudywood.com, click on the icon for news, capital N-E-W-S, scroll down ever so slightly to a yellow box. On the left, you'll see the date, 6 December, for this program. And on the right, click on the link, and you'll be right there at the photographs we're looking at. And at the moment, we're just finishing 28 and 29.
You could go below. There's some pictures in the middle of the screen on the front page of the Dirt series and the Star Wars series. And right below that is the news section in yellow. Yes. Let me just watch the look at the page. I can't find that other link.
Okay.
Yes, we're on the More Dirt page. And we just finished going through where this other construction site was, where they don't seem to use dirt and they don't seem to use high security.
Yes, very interesting, the contrast.
And the three pictures below that, 33, 4, and 5, are just pictures from the streets around there that I know that I have pictures of with dust all over them. Like figure 34, you may remember seeing completely covered with dust.
34.
I ever posted.
Yeah.
And you might recognize those old posts.
Yeah. Aren't those interesting?
Well, that's why I wanted that picture, because, to show the before and after. Now, there's another interesting thing we saw. I went down to the PATH train station, and you can see that entrance up above. Let's see if we can find it. In figure 22.
Figure 22.
You see a white fence.
A white vent? You mean it was canopied?
Yeah. That's
okay.
That's the entrance to the PATH train station.
That's the entrance to the PATH train tunnel, okay.
And when you go down there,
The trains are running.
Yes, they began running, I think, just a year after 9/11.
Okay.
Isn't that interesting? They got them up and running so quickly.
Yes.
And the street level, of course, is elevated and supported with beams. And I'll be adding pictures of the beams being put into place for that building. But here I have pictures of some of those beams that look like they've disintegrated.
Yes.
This is figure 36, 37, 38.
Yes.
The other two are placeholders. It's just a beam through the paint has corroded out.
So it looks kind of rust-like.
Right, it's just disintegrating. It looks like it's been sitting at the bottom of the ocean for a few years.
Yes. So they're going to have a problem here, aren't they? They're going to have to replace beams like this, are they not?
This is the foundation that we were standing on, taking a picture of those dirt piles.
Yeah.
This supports those foundations.
Seems to me they got a problem, Judy. When they get around to replacing those, there's going to be a huge, difficult problem.
I don't know if they need to replace them. I mean, these are brand new beams, I believe.
These are brand new beams that are already deteriorating.
Yes.
Which means the residual effects of the mechanism used to destroy the Twin Towers is still operating even on these brand new beams, even though it's been massively diluted by tons of dirt, water, and who knows what else.
But it's, right, it continues. And I've got a picture, well, as we scroll down the page, I've added the picture since we began talking, so.
Okay, might need to refresh.
Yeah.
I'll go ahead and refresh. Okay.
And you see a picture there of Rudy and talking about his dirt trucks.
Love that guy, Rudy. What a wonderful, he was our hero on 9/11. I can't begin to tell you where we would have been without him.
Oh, right, and the morning after 9/11, the very next morning, he's bragging about the 120 dump trucks.
What a guy.
He had going in and out of Ground Zero.
We were able to move 120 dump trucks out of the city last night. He doesn't talk about bringing them in. So you see, this is a master of distraction, right? It doesn't say we brought 120 dump trucks in with loads of dirt, and then we took 120 loads of debris out. He ignores one half of it.
And it's interesting that it was on George Washington's blog that misquote that he had typed. Well, he typed it. He took out some key words in the sentence to change the meaning. But it had said how these Ground Zero workers, the longer they're there, the further they dug, the more dirt appeared. And it looked like topsoil.
So you're telling me George Washington edited this quote?
No, not this quote. Another quote from a Ground Zero worker.
That's very disturbing. This guy is himself an attorney. He's an intellectual property attorney. His name is Alex Flom. He has to know better. If they were edited, I can't imagine how it could possibly be accidental or inadvertent.
Right, but we don't need to spend time on that. The particular quote was very interesting, though, how that they're using water to keep down the dust. And
yeah, they want to explain why they have water there.
Yeah, and it was to keep down the dust.
Keep down the dust.
Huh?
Hmm.
And then how he talks about seeing topsoil, more and more topsoil, the longer they're working at Ground Zero.
Do they need more and more topsoil?
No, that he found, they saw more.
They saw more, yeah.
Yeah, you know, like the first day, they don't see so much. The next day, you see more, and the next day, you see even more. How did the topsoil multiply? They brought it in. And then I've got a link to an article that came out just a few days ago.
Yes.
The Medical Examiner changing the definition of 9/11 related death.
You know, this is very, very interesting, isn't it? That this guy is manipulating the definition.
And what struck me, knowing the guy in the yellow rubber suit there,
yeah,
you know, having seen him, that the one that they're talking about that died, that they changed the definition over, was a traffic cop who started working there 2 days after 9/11.
Police officer James Godby.
Yeah.
I'm reading this.
Whoever he is, I want him to know that I care. I care what happened.
Chief Medical Examiner Charles Hirsch has so far drawn the most narrow definition as he considers requests to reclassify several respiratory deaths as homicides.
I think it said that they had to have been working there on 9/11, not 2 days later.
All persons killed at the World Trade Center on September 11th and others who died later from complications of injury or exposure directly caused by the collapse of the Twin Towers on that day are homicide victims.
But not somebody who started working 2 days later.
No, Mr. Godby's manner of death will remain natural.
I worry about this fellow here in figure 22 in the yellow rubber suit. I worry.
Figure 42?
Yeah.
Yeah, you mean what's going to happen to him?
Right.
Stand by. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo, with my special guest, Dr. Judy Wood. Stand by. My special guest today is Dr. Judy Wood, former professor of mechanical engineering at Clemson University, who has degrees in civil engineering with emphasis on structural engineering mechanics, also known as applied physics, and her PhD in materials engineering science. These are the disciplines that appear to be most directly relevant to the study of the events of 9/11 at the World Trade Center, where she is, in my opinion, the research community's leading expert. We're reviewing a series of photographs she's added to her website at drjudywood.com. If you go there and click on the icon for news, N-E-W-S, at the top of the page, it'll bring you to another page where if you scroll down to a yellow box on the left, you'll see 6 December for today's interview, and on the right, a link leading you to the series of photographs we're reviewing of a recent trip she made to New York City with Morgan Reynolds. Judy?
There are a few other books along with this as well. on this field trip. And as you talked about the most qualified, I think what makes us the most qualified is being able to look and see and understand what we're seeing.
Well, that's a nice point, that you know what to look for, and your capacity for sorting these things out is, in my opinion, phenomenal, because you resist the tendency to subsume what you're looking at under familiar concepts.
And how I've done that is giving different phenomena that I come across, I give each one a different name.
And a name that doesn't presume exactly what's going on, especially in terms of familiar categories.
Right, just an arbitrary name. For example, you see some haze in the background, and instead of calling it smoke, if you called it smoke, you would, you know...
Prejudge.
You'd be biased to assuming it was fire-related.
So it had certain kinds of causes and certain sorts of effects.
Right, so fuming is my generic term for stuff that we don't know what... If it's a chemical process, if it's burning, or what it is. But there's various other terms that I encounter. Back on this page, figure 42, I have that picture of the guy in the yellow rubber hazmat suit.
Yes.
And I feel for him. He's in a hot suit. Maybe they have him more ventilated, but a hot suit on a pretty warm day. You see the guy in the background with a sleeveless or short sleeve shirt.
Right.
Nice sunlight you see from the shadows. But this guy is suited up for some reason.
Maybe it's to give directions to the trucks as they come out. I mean, it's got to be to make him conspicuous. It's got to be identifying him as playing a certain role, I would presume.
Or it's protective wear.
Yeah.
And that article that we were discussing was about changing the, narrowing the definition of 9/11 related death.
Yeah.
And...
Well, see, this would be a key guy to have under your control if you were going to pull off something like this and you wanted to minimize the range of effects to make it not conspicuous that there was such a vast array of collateral casualties.
To narrow the definition. But
right.
I am worried about the various people who have died, and it doesn't get counted as a 9/11 death. It just gets written up as, what they said, natural causes?
Right, because then the government can disavow any responsibility if there's any liability claim. They've done the same thing in Iraq, Judy, as I understand it, that they only count as casualties of war persons who are dead on the scene of the combat, and if they die later in a hospital, say in Germany, then they're not counted as combat casualties.
What worries me and concerns me is that this process appears to be continuing. And if it's continuing, it's continuing to affect people.
Yes.
And they can say, well, it's not a 9/11 related death because the people didn't die on 9/11 or whatever they're,
Yeah, the game, the semantical game they're playing.
And takes us to this last picture, which I just added to this page, since we've been talking. It's one I've shown before. One of the pictures I have... Two pictures that have given me an aha moment.
Uh-huh.
And the aha moment for this is part of the same scene. That we are, is this figure 43, we are upwind of the WTC complex.
Yeah.
There's a gun roof. And in the distance you see the parking lot on fire.
Uh-huh.
Or apparently on fire. And you see paper and dust in the street. This is West Street. We're looking west. Towards the Hudson. If we drove a few blocks over, that's where we would be, in the Hudson. And you got a clear blue sky. The sky is cleared out, so we know we're upwind. And look at everything is pretty much settled out of house.
Yeah.
But then you start noticing, there's a guy on the right with an orange bag.
Yeah.
And behind him, just to the left, you see a fuzzy ball kind of blob under the guy's feet.
Right.
You start noticing the one on the very right, you got this fuzz ball around that guy's feet.
Yeah.
And there's a guy in the center, near the center, he's got a pretty black suit.
Well, I think he's a policeman.
Yeah, he doesn't have the dust on him like the other ones do, but his feet have that fuzz ball around them.
Right.
So what does that tell you? what it tells me is we have a clear sky. The dust has settled out. It settled out because it was coarse. It was heavy. It landed. It settled out of the air. The fine stuff we see coming up around their feet is finer than what would have settled out of the air in 15 or 20 minutes.
And therefore?
Therefore, it wasn't there 15 or 20 minutes ago. The coarse stuff that settled out is continuing to break down. Finer and finer and finer until it starts floating up.
In other words, the coarse landed, but now the coarse is continuing to dissolve, undergoing this process of molecular dissociation and producing this fine dust.
Right. The coarse dust lands and breaks down into finer and finer and finer dust.
Very interesting.
And how else do you explain the fine haze coming up from their feet?
Yeah. It is curious, yes. And then it's finer dust than the dust that's settled, than the dust that's under their feet, for the most part.
How can it settle that quickly? This is about 15 minutes after the North Tower went poof. And you can tell from the, you know, the black clouds of the burning in the background. And also the various vehicles in that photograph were in a video that someone took who was running the video camera while the towers were going poof. And they walked out from behind these cars, and you could trace their steps. And what was interesting during that video is you don't hear any slamming on the ground of anything. It's like a snowfall. It was just dust landing. And you look around and you wonder where the buzzing went. And it sure appears that it is breaking down and continuing to break down. And then 6 years later...
It's still breaking down.
Yes. This is the problem.
This stuff has to be extraordinarily potent, Judy. I mean, the residual effects here are just stunning.
Or what got fed in some kind of chain reaction?
Yes. It reminds me of acid, you know, where acid will just continue to dissolve and dissolve and dissolve.
Yes.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Judy Wood. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo Trade Center. And I must say, Judy, I never cease to be amazed at how much I learn from just going through your photographs on your website every time we have the opportunity to discuss them. And, please do tell me where you'd like to take us now, because I know that our audience is keenly interested in your most recent analysis of everything that took place on that tragic day.
I think this series will be developing because I have more pages I've already prepared. I just hadn't, the time wasn't right to put them up. But what I think concerns everyone out there is that this process appears to be continuing. We don't know what it is that's been monkeyed with.
But it is like a molecular acid, isn't it? I mean, the comparison is actually very appropriate.
I don't know. It's like something is just coming apart.
Uh-huh.
And it just continues to keep coming apart. What's it going to unraveling?
What's going to happen if 5 or 10 years from now they're still unable to put anything up at the World Trade Center because of this phenomenon? Isn't the whole world going to be just stunned?
Does it cause you to wonder why they haven't buildings on Ground Zero?
I mean, this is like some of the most valuable real estate in the world.
And after 6 years, there's no building there.
And it's for reasons that have to be very well understood by the vast majority of those involved in all of this, in particular all the supervisors. Everyone from the lowest level supervisor on up, it seems to me, has to know that there is a problem here.
They're probably scared. I don't blame them. And this is pretty serious, and it's pretty scary.
And you've got the medical examiner, it seems to me, has been ensnared in this whole business, giving these artificially narrow definitions. I mean, that's a very...
But it's something that is going to continue, and it's not going to get better. And we need to figure out some way, as a culture, to figure out you know, what are the best steps forward for everybody?
Yes. Yes. Would you like to take us back to some parts of your other website, of your website, even if we have seen them before? I'm particularly interested in the fuming of Building 7, which is a phenomenon that I think fascinates an awful lot of us.
If people are on this particular page,
yeah,
it says continue to next page. If you had refreshed it, it'll work. The other, if you had refreshed it, the link won't work.
Okay, continue to next page. I'm there.
And that takes you to page 2.
Yes.
Series.
Yes.
And you're the dirt series, and I think at the top you can, there might be a building 7. It's right after 5.
Right after 5. Let's see.
Look at the very top.
I'm looking at the very top.
Yeah.
I see Alka-Seltzer, Fuzzballs, Dirt, Cheetos, USG, Temp, Humans.
Yeah, WTC-7.
Oh, WTC-7. Yeah, okay, there we go.
It was temporarily sitting in that position.
Yeah, okay. I'm there.
Doesn't it make it sense to have it page 7?
That would be a good idea, sure.
So, I didn't really want it to be page 6. So if we can look down through that and look at building 7. And 7, yes, it was different than 1 and 2, but it was also the same as 1 and 2.
Yeah, well, expand upon that. That's fascinating.
It 1 and 2 unraveled from the top down, and that was my word on 9/11.
Unraveled.
Yeah, things unraveled like a sweater.
Uh-huh.
And Building 7 unraveled from the bottom up.
Uh-huh.
And so if we start out on that page, it's for those who don't know where, you know, who got lost on the transfer, it's drjudywood.com/articles/dirt/wtc7.html. And at the start of that, you see some pictures of before. Nice, tall building 7. And this figure 6. Really impresses me. You look way down there at the street, way down below.
Yeah, that's a gorgeous photograph.
And
this is such a handsome building, Judy.
That building, you know, fell down, straight down. It didn't even spill out into the road much. It didn't spill out across the street.
Well, this building should have fallen at all is preposterous.
But the fact that it did, it still seems impossible for it to... You know, it's like a tree. A tree does not, you know, telescope down.
Uh-huh.
It tips over. This did not tip over. And it turned into sawdust from the bottom up. Perfectly. And as you can see, looking out, the post office is the postal building's on the right, and Verizon is the building on the left of it. And if you look at figure 8, down the page, you can see that there was no spillage across the street.
Just astounding, isn't it?
No damage done to the postal building, as far as I know. And just a minimal amount of stuff on the roof. How can that be? And in figure 8...
Yeah, even the roof of the postal building looks completely clear. I mean, there's some around that, you know, that rim... You see that lower level extension, you know, sort of like a balcony or walkway. There's some debris there, but...
Yeah, you have weak tinfoil coverings.
It's not even obvious that came from Building 7. That could have come from the North Tower.
Yeah, it looks like aluminum cladding.
Yeah.
It's like paper airplanes.
Yeah.
Tinfoil paper airplanes. And then continuing below there... I was going to put in some pictures of the Hudson Department Store. That was the biggest building that's been demolished to date in the Guinness Book of Records. But below there, we have the figures 9, 10. I need to renumber the figures. Looking down West Broadway.
Some of the toasted cars and buses.
You know, that white foam stuff all over the place. Like that red van. It's kind of weird how it's like peeled halfway down here.
Yes, stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Dr. Judy Wood. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. My special guest today is Dr. Judy Wood, former professor of mechanical engineering at Clemson University, and in my judgment, the leading scientist to be studying the events of 9/11, especially those at the World Trade Center. And we have completed a photo selection related to a recent visit to New York City she made in the company of Morgan Reynolds and others. And now we're turning to some photos that relate to the destruction of Building 7, which, of course, is fascinating because it didn't occur until 5:20 in the afternoon, about 7 hours or more after the North and South Tower had been destroyed. And it seemed to show different effects of the mechanism used to bring it down. Judy suggesting that while the North and South Tower unraveled from the top down, Building 7 unraveled from the bottom up. So this is really quite fascinating stuff. We're on the following page, drjudywood.com/articles/dirt/wtc7.html. Judy?
Yeah, and it was rather impressive to have a 47-story building telescope straight down to almost nothingness without spilling across the street.
Well, it's such an impregnable building, you know. My judgment is this has to be one of the most robustly constructed buildings in the history of structural engineering, including that it was erected over two massive electrical generators providing electricity to lower Manhattan, and they used solid steel beams to support it. Even in the World Trade Center, they were hollowed out in the center, which still provides nearly as much support, but just to make sure they had that extra strength for Building 7, they used solid steel beams.
Yeah, this goes well beyond what the strength of the material is, but even just think about the geometry. This
is
a symmetrical building.
Yes.
How can it disintegrate in a symmetrical fashion?
Yes, just look at it there. It's slightly skewed trapezoidal structure.
And if it was, you know, damaged on the front, it would, tend to tip toward the front, wouldn't it?
Yes, and the one photograph we have from the New York Police Department turns out, according to, from pilots for 9/11 Truth, to have been faked because they have photographs taken about the same time that show no damage in relation to the police department. And, of course, if there had been some significant structural damage, which was, in my judgment, clearly not the case, there would have been some kind of asymmetrical effect. It's just as, the distribution of the jet fuel in those fires in the Twin Towers, if it had been hot enough to bring about any effects, they would have been gradual, sagging, asymmetrical. And, of course, there was no cause whatsoever to bring about any kind of collapse. And naturally, as we well know, nothing like that took place.
And back on this page that we're talking about, looking at Building 7, now we know, let's go back and look at these pictures and see that, indeed, the process is continuing there as well. We see, maybe it was more controlled. So that's why they were able to rebuild on that part of now tenants in that building. And I don't know if it's completely okay, but I'll assume it is. But, they haven't been able to build at all on the main WTC complex.
When are the citizens of New York going to start to raise questions about this, Judy? It seems to me such a striking phenomenon that they would not have been able to build yet that I can't imagine New Yorkers who are very sophisticated not finding this very, very curious.
Right, and the dirt getting hauled in, you saw that nice, beautiful dirt pile.
Yes.
You don't put dirt in to build a foundation.
Yes. This isn't a garden, after all.
Right. And it was scooped out 3 days later.
Stunning. Absolutely stunning. Well, I'm looking at figure 8 and see, of course, some fuming still taking place there.
And down at figure 18, or 14. 14, you see fuming as the same kind of fuming as you see on the main complex.
13 and 14.
And then if you continue down to 18.
Yes.
I call that the Dagwood sandwich. It looks like that dirt sandwich.
Uh-huh.
With a few reinforcing steel beams in it.
It is massive.
Where is that dirt coming from?
That's a great question. Where's the dirt coming from? That's an absolutely terrific question, Judy.
So it didn't climb up from the ground.
I mean, it wasn't there to begin with. Even if you go back to 13, you don't have those. Well, there's some dirt in 13, isn't there? You go all the way back.
The far right corner of 13, that was the first time I noticed dirt in
'87. Oh, this is the one that first triggered off your realization that dirt was being brought in or involved here?
Right, right. And then one of the trolls argued the point, put up that figure 18 picture saying, see, this is just what it looks like. So building 1 and 2 was normal collapse.
I love it. Maybe building 7 was full of dirt.
Right.
Maybe they were running a nursery in there.
And look at 19 and 20.
Uh-huh.
And then 21, look at that dirt pile grow.
It is astonishing. You wonder how they got all that dirt in there, Judy. How did they get it in there?
I wonder if they dropped it from choppers at night or, you know.
I mean, it's like they had a hose that was, instead of water coming out, was dirt. How could they do that?
And then if you scroll further down the page to the lathering up section, you'll see the similarities.
Well, 22 is just awful. God, how awful.
It's dirt. Fresh potting soil.
Yeah, lathering up on 28 and 29, for example.
Yeah.
These have to be some of the most bizarre photographs in the entire sequence.
And, you know, that isn't just fire doing that uniformly. The fires in 34 and 35, they claim that the fires were started from Building 1 falling on Building 7. Then why is Building 7 lathering up? Well, Building 1 is still standing.
Pretty damn interesting question. And, of course, Building 1 is lathering just as much as Building 7, although it's a different kind of smoke, isn't it? I mean, the distribution of whatever is lathering is different.
Right. That's why I want to call it smoke, because we don't know what it is.
No, I agree completely.
And 37, man, that thing is really, taken away there. And it was just shooting that stuff out of every orifice on just that one face of the building.
Yes. Now, can you elaborate on that, why it's the one face only of the building?
I can only speculate there.
Yeah.
I just designed the process, but that's a way of controlling the exposure. Because if you're blowing it upwind and it comes back and hits the building again, you're getting a second dose.
Meaning if the stuff is toxic or active or, you know, chemically...
Yeah, let's say it's soaking up and softening up the material, or whatever it's doing. You want to be able to control the rate at which something is exposed.
Now, would it be correct to assume that there's something going on throughout the entire building, but it's just coming out the one side of the building, or is only something going on the external surface of the building?
I believe this is the whole building.
The whole building.
And it's just coming out of the downwind.
Studied stuff, Judy. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo, with my special guest, Dr. Judy Wood. Stand by. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo, with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch Kevin here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Today, my special guest, Dr. Judy Wood, former professor of mechanical engineering at Clemson University, and in my judgment, the most important scientist studying the events of 9/11. We're on a website reviewing the events involving WTC-7, which is a source of endless fascination to every student of 9/11. We're on her page, drjudywood.com/articles/dirt/WTC7.html. Judy, I'm looking at 36 and 37, and they are just fascinating. Judy?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay.
I'm saying I'm looking at photos 36 and 37, and they're just fascinating.
36 is, to me, one of the most spectacular. It was in a magazine, I think. And this, we know what date it is.
Because Building 7 is still standing.
Correct. And we can see Building 7 from where we're standing because there's no Tower 1 in the way.
And you know, Father Frank Morales, who, of course, was the first responder who came down to administer last rites and was astonished, like practically every other first responder, at the complete dearth of bodies, that we had, you know, just no bodies present, said that actually where the World Trade Center buildings 1 and 2 had stood, there were smoldering pits that were actually below ground level.
Right, and you can see from this picture, we're all at ground level, and it's just everything's flat. In the distance on the left, you see the Northern Pedestrian Bridge.
Yeah,
that was just above traffic height.
Yeah.
And you see, you know, daylight under it, and it's collapsed at one end.
Yes.
So we're, you know, ground level, a few inches above that, maybe, but the building is gone. This is a new technology that can disappear a building. Poof it.
Stunning. Absolutely stunning stuff.
And instead of using it for destructive purposes, wouldn't it be nice if we could understand this technology better and use it for good purposes?
Yes, of course. But there's a sadistic streak, I think, that goes with the powerful where, particularly those of the caliber in charge of this government at this time, it's just catastrophic to have people who are of such low repute in control of such vast power.
I like to, you know, stay more focused on the physical properties of this.
Yes.
And what all happened. And I think there's little doubt once someone looks at the pictures, openly looks, you know, it feels their eyes open. And not,
How can that be so difficult? I mean, it's, to me, astonishing that there are any segments at all in the community, Judy, that aren't absolutely absorbed by what you present here. I mean, to me, it has to be that they are deliberately uninterested in the truth and not only want to obfuscate it, but to discourage those who might have a sincere interest from actually studying the evidence that would be most helpful in figuring out what happened.
No, Jim, it's called PSYOPs.
Yeah, I understand.
Psychological operation. It gets people to see something different and to interpret things differently than how they are. Yeah, for example, folks are told when they see such a picture as this is that all the steel was shipped to China or Asia. But it can't be shipped to China before noon.
That's a nice point.
From the shadows on the ground, it's not even noontime yet.
Yeah.
Where does steel go?
Yeah. No, my suggestion was the purpose of the PSYOPs is to, you know, obfuscate what actually happened or discourage people from even looking at the evidence that would enable them to better understand what took place.
Someone posted something on Op-Ed News yesterday. I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was something about, that the stuff coming off of the energy coming off of the food fight is strongest over the target.
Yeah.
If you're running over the target, you get attacked the most.
Yeah, well, I think that's absolutely right. Jack White, I may have mentioned this to you before, a longtime researcher, especially the photos and films in relation to JFK, said that his yardstick was the more intensively you're being attacked, the greater the probability that you're onto something important.
I was recently reviewing that Greg Jenkins set up piece,
yes.
And I feel honored. They could see where I was going before I did.
Well, see, they knew what actually happened. That's a great advantage the culprits have in covering things up. They know what actually happened. Like, you look at the videos and you say, well, why would they do that, or why would they do that? Well, if you don't know what they had to conceal or change or alter from the original, then you wouldn't understand it. That's why it's so difficult and such a masterpiece of detective ingenuity that you are, you know, able to actually figure this out, given the limited clues that are available.
But they, I think, knew that I had to...
We reiterate, I mean, your qualifications are perfect. You have exactly the back...
Pretty important. That's what he was telling me.
Well, the fact is that people actually listen to the conversation without viewing, you know, the images and so forth, and pay attention to what you actually said. It was a very deft handling of a lot of verbal traps that he was trying to lead you into.
Right. It didn't fall into any of them.
You did it. You skillfully eluded them.
The interesting is that, you know, if you look at the images I posted on that link, you know, some of the screenshots, I am very out of focus, dark, you know, profile shot. It's kind of like when you're a kid and you held your flashlight under your chin, you know, to tell ghost stories. And then Jenkins is viewed straight on, and the contrast.
Well, and then they pile on all these photos and images taken from weird angles so that they try to create the impression that there really was a massive pile of debris from the North and the South Tower, when as we even have from Frank Morales, that they were actually below ground level, and we have photographs like the one that's so stunning we've been addressing that show that that's a complete misrepresentation. And yet, like lemmings, there are many out there who would follow along behind, you know, a Greg Jenkins, no matter what kind of tomfoolery he wants to deliver.
Actually, I feel kind of sorry for him, but because I don't think he was supposed to do what he did, but he gave me a lot of information, very useful information.
Inferentially, by looking at the issues that he wanted to address and where he wanted to cut you off at the pass and so forth. Well, Judy, you see, you just happen to have the background and expertise that enables you to see through it, which is just another reason why you are such a valued member of this research community.
The page I have, Reading Between the Lines, is very worth reading because it tells you much about what it is that needs to be hidden.
Judy, I can't wait to have you back. It's been a privilege, and I consider it to be a present to have you on my birthday. Thank you so much, and I look forward to having you back.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Thank you all for listening.